Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, of the making of books, there is no end. How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Well, hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. Well, again, I have no comments today. I'm always waiting for some comments. Hopefully, all of you out there listening to the programs are excited by them. Just let us know. We'd really like to hear from you. Well, on our last two programs, I discussed Krauthammer's thought-provoking essay on the subject of the question, are we alone in the universe? Now, you can still hear these programs at either at thetrumpet_com or on SoundCloud under the and just look under the subject JBL. Now, I think you will be inspired by the programs as much as I was in doing them. Now, for today's program, it's Back to Earth and a new essay. Again, this is an essay, I think, by one of the truly best essayists of our time. But today's program essay title is Women and Children Still. Now, I'm in the midst of preparing a new article on the current civil war among feminists, so this essay caught my attention. And I think, again, just like all Krauthammer's essays, it's really, really quite fascinating. Now, to help me do this, back in the studio with me today is my best friend, companion in literature, and my wife of 4+ decades, Deborah Leap. So welcome back, Deborah.
Thank you. It's good to be here again.
So I just thought saying 4+ decades is doesn't sound as bad as 46 years. 4+ decades doesn't reveal our age. So let me just read the first beginning paragraph of the essay to set the to set this up. So again, Krauthammer, I just think, does an amazing job of hooking you into his essay. He says, you're on the Titanic 2. Notice, it's not Titanic 1. He says, you're on Titanic 2. It has just hit an iceberg and is sinking. And as last time, there are not enough lifeboats. So he's connecting us with the history of the Titanic here. He says, the captain shouts, women and children first. But this time, another voice is heard. Why women? Now, I think that, again, is just a great opening. And it's really, I think, just very, very fascinating. I think all of you out there, maybe if you haven't figured it out yet, the background of this paragraph is the 1997 James Cameron film Titanic. And remember, the two leading stars in that were Kate Winslet and then DiCaprio. And we both saw that movie, didn't we?
Oh, yes.
And we probably saw it a couple times.
Yes.
At that time. So what he's showing here is today, if there is a Titanic 2, and I think this is really, he's really drawing a connection with feminism, even though he doesn't say it. I do think he's trying to draw us into that. And he say, why women? And so, so let me just read quote B now. It says, why indeed? Part of the charm of the cosmically successful movie Titanic is the period costume, period extravagance, period class prejudice. An audience can enjoy these at a distance. Oddly, however, all of the period mores in the film, the old maritime tradition of women and children first, enjoys total acceptance by modern audiences. Listen to the booing and the hissing at the on-screen heavies who try to sneak on with or ahead of the ladies. I don't think that I remember booing or hissing when those men tried to get on the boats before the women. But I think I do remember feeling disgusted that a man would do such a thing. So think about this. Now, he wrote this in 1998, I think. Just think how feminism has changed things even since 1998.
Yes, it would be interesting to have that movie played now. I wonder how many people would boo it, because it seems like even in movies and, you know, the in television shows, that the woman, there's always a woman, a strong woman, and physically strong, not just
Right.
Not just emotionally strong, but physically strong. So right. It'd be interesting.
Yeah.
To see that.
I certainly don't think the men would be booing.
Right. Yes.
And, you know, I don't know if the women would be booing or not because, you know, there's so many women, and again, let's just talk because of, as Krauthammer even says in this essay, the restructuring of society by feminism. You know, I don't know if the audience would even enjoy Titanic as much.
That's true. Yes. Well, like he says, they can look at it from a distance and you know, look at the, you know, that all the things they did in that the period, you know, that we don't do now, and they can enjoy it from a distance. But not. But you know, this almost like it's almost like laughing at it, but not really. You know, like
right.
Like the, oh, isn't that quaint? But we don't do that now.
Right. Right. I think it would be, you know, it's like. You know, just all the things that are going on in politics right now with the snooty elite. I mean, I think they would just think it's stupid. They think, well, you know, it's the Trumpers, the Trump supporters. They're just deplorables. And how could they get off on such a romantic movie as such as Titanic? I could just see that. So the thing is you know, I've been reading the book by Mona Sharon on sex matters and really... To me, the title of the book kind of really does not match with really what's in the book. And actually, it's in some ways, you have to read the whole book to be able to understand why she gave it that title. Because the book isn't necessarily about sex.
Right.
It's about the feminist war on men.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that she also claims very clearly in the book that men are men and women are women.
Right.
And they're not meant to be equal.
Right. Well, you know, that,
especially in physical things.
Physical, right, right. Right. That they, just because they're different, they are actually very different, doesn't mean that one is
better than the other.
Better or more inferior.
Right.
It's just that they are different.
Right. But that, mm-hmm. that is the narrative.
Right.
Of modern feminism. And so it's interesting. Of course, you know everything I do anyway. You know what I'm writing on. The war between the young feminists now and the war between the older feminists. And the older feminists are beginning to realize there has been these illusions about feminism that aren't true. And they're coming out and saying more things that sound anti-feminist, and especially to the young feminists. I know you did a little bit of research on this, so let's get into what you've researched about this whole thing. So maybe I should say about the expression in women and children first.
Right. Well, it's interesting that I actually looked online and there was a debate on in disasters like the Titanic, do you think women should be saved first? So I didn't even say children, just said women first. Okay. And so this online debate, I don't, you know, how many people are involved and how, you know, correct it is, but 63% said no, that women should not be saved first, and only 37% said yes. So I thought that was interesting to see the difference. Even I don't know if you can compare between 1998 and today, but there's a difference there. So I thought that
right.
was interesting.
Right. Well, what I think is interesting. I don't think I could have understood this essay as well as I do now without having read Mona Sharon's book.
Right, yes.
And I think the 67% is coming from more of the young Me Too feminists. And I guess, I don't know what wave you'd call the Me Too movement. You know, there was they call it the first wave. That goes all the way back. I mean, to women's suffrage, that was way back in the ancient days.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, then there was Germaine Greer and some of the other more, Betty Friedan, you know, they were like the wave two. Then there's like wave three. And now I guess the Me Too movement would be wave four. You know?
Yes.
So, anyway, what Mona really has to say about this is you would have a lot of people, both men and women, that would say, hey, women don't go first. Because if they did, they would look like they're what?
They're weaker.
Or yes. Unequal.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
Or unequal to men.
Right.
And the whole movement of feminists has been to show that women and men are equal physically and sexually. And it's just not true. There's a difference, and it's a biological difference. It's not a cultural difference, and that's the big thing, is especially the young modern feminists really believe this whole idea of sexual identity. It's all cultural. In other words, you're not born male or female. It's society that trains you to be male or female. And of course, if you go back to the whole history of this, women and children first, it is interesting that, well, if we I know you did a little bit of research on this, but if you go back into the 1800s, these things were accepted, that women, they weren't seen as being as strong as men. And even Mona Sharon brings out in her book, if you get the strongest man, a physical man, if be strong physically, the strongest one you can find, and you get the strongest woman that you can find, they're still not going to be equally strong. And she says biologically it's just not possible. So there's these narratives that people believe that are illusions. He goes on to say, by the way, in Things That Matter, it's on page 40 for those who are out there listening, he says, but is not grouping women with the children a raging anachronism? Should not any self-respecting modern person, let alone feminist, object to it as patronizing and demeaning to women? Yet its usage is as common today as it was in 1912. Consider these examples taken almost at random from recent newspapers. So the one thing that I think Charles Krauthammer is dealing with is he's dealing, to me it seems like he's grappling with this whole issue. You know, what's right? You know, should women and children go first? Or should just children go first? Or should men go first? You know, it seems like, you know, that's what feminism has done to us. It's just thrown all of these things, you know, it's like everything's out of order. It's like a planet out of orbit, you know, and I'm slipping back into my universe program. But anyway, I think that's true. I think what he's saying is if people would hear women and children first, some of them would probably go nuts with it. Because it doesn't sound like it's really up to date. Well, that's really old-fashioned stuff. But inside me, it just seems normal. I mean, you know, that you want to protect a woman. And I don't know what you think about that.
Yes, well, I think Krauthammer is pointing out the conundrum, or like the dichotomy of how people actually act, but then how people are being taught to act. He actually is just showing that, you know, why is this? He's really basically giving information about
right.
what the society is right now.
Right. But yeah. I guess, you know, of course, unfortunately, he is dead now, and we can't call him and ask mm-hmm. him what he really meant here. But I do think it's interesting that, you know, there was a time, and when we were back in college, where I think feminism was really starting to grow its roots and maybe get a little, blossoms on its trees, maybe I should say. But I remember I was always taught to open a door for a woman, and then I remember getting slam dunked for doing that. I was told not to do that anymore. So even when I go to our local Y, I open the doors for both women and men.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that some people really appreciate it.
I think a lot of people do appreciate it. I think it just probably depends on what society you're in or what area you're in. But I think a lot of people still do appreciate that. In some ways, it's just showing care and concern for anybody, you know, outgoing
right.
concern for someone else.
Right. And I noticed that if I do that, then other people will do it for me as well.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Mona talks about how feminists have really worked hard to destroy chivalry.
Mm-hmm.
But I still feel people love it. People still accept it. And I think that's what Krauthammer is bringing out. You have to remember, he was, you know, living in New York. He was, a great essayist working in some liberal organizations. I mean, he would have been around it all the time. And I know when I worked at Westinghouse Electric, and of course I some of my, you know, work associates were definitely women. And I can remember back, let's say, maybe in the early 80s, that someone heard a conversation I had with you, and they they chided me after I ended the conversation. They didn't like how I talked to you on the phone. And so he was around this all the time. And so I think he was amazed when there would still be newspaper headlines. And he does show this. This is still on this first page. He says, Dateline Mexico. He talks about these things from random newspapers. It says, members of a parliamentary group gunned down the Indians, most of them women and children. So he's mystified. Why, if women are equal, if we're being told this all the time, if men and women are equal, why are people still associating women and children together as if it's 1852? He says another one, Dateline Burundi. As many as 200 civilians, most of them women and children, were killed. He says, Dateline Croatia. Kupresic was named in an open indictment for the massacre in Omišlja, in which 103 Muslims, including 33 women and children, were killed. And he goes on to ask, he says, well, why are we still saying this when we know that women fly combat aircraft? I mean, women have worked so hard to be seen as equals with men. Now they are. Why are we still bringing attention to it? And I think he was really struggling with it. I mean, that's my opinion. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think he really gave an answer when we read to the end of it. That he doesn't really give you an answer of what he really thinks.
No.
So I think he just leaves it up in the air.
Leaves it up to us. He does go on to say, though, that he thinks we need to take care of women and children first. He does go on to say that. But I know, I'll just throw this in. I know that the Bible does teach men that women and children are weaker, and that it's our obligation, or it's our job, especially as a husband, to protect the wife and to protect his children. I mean, that's a job that you're given. And, of course, that would fly in the face of many feminists.
Oh, yes, they would. They hate that, yes.
You know, and, of course, all the transgender people out there, all the people that believe in transgenderism. You know, I know that I've gotten into some pretty tough discussions with people that say, well, people are born different. And even Mona Sharon brings out that there's been enough medical studies to know you cannot put a girl brain in a boy body, or you can't put a boy brain in a girl body. They're different. They've done enough studies, but the feminists have got so much control that people are afraid to say it.
Yes, they've done studies of the brain, and a female brain and a male brain are different, and
right.
they react to things differently. So,
right.
And it's proven. It's biology. It's science.
Right. But that doesn't mean the woman's brain is weaker.
No, they're just different.
It's different. Yes. Yeah, and I know from what Ms. Sharon says in her book, if you say that a woman's brain is smaller, feminists interpret that as it's less important. It's not at all.
No, that's right.
No, and in fact, there are parts of a woman's brain that are actually better than parts of a man's brain. And when you put the two together in a marriage situation, the brains complement each other.
That's right.
Each brain needs the other brain. You know, and that's why they say that marriage makes you one, because, you know, even the Bible brings it out. God says it's not good for the man to be alone. Well, guess what? It's not good for the woman to be alone either. And the two brains complement each other. So I do know that he was Jewish. I don't know how much he really believed what the Bible said. That's not what we necessarily want to get into anyway. But, I think it is really quite interesting is that there is a difference, and God created inherent differences, but people do not want to follow those differences. They wanted to have everybody the same, and it just doesn't work. And of course, even Mona Sharon says that's the failure of feminism. It's really created a war of the sexes. It hasn't necessarily helped the sexes. So I know you have some other things you want to talk about. So let's go ahead there.
Well, just where the whole idea of women and children first came from was, it looks like it was HMS Birkenhead. Was a Royal Navy troop ship, and it was during evacuation in 1852 of this ship. It was a disaster. Sinking of this ship is when the idea of women and children being evacuated first came about. So then it became kind of this maritime code of conduct, but it wasn't like it was a legal thing. It was just something that they did.
Right.
And then of course, with the Titanic, it became very popular. So
did you get any statistics on the Titanic?
The Titanic, yes, let's see, I have it right here. 74% of the women and 52% of the children on board were saved, but only 20% of the men were saved with the Titanic. And so they said that some of it may have been there was some misunderstanding about the order given that, well, first of all, of course, there weren't enough lifeboats. But then one of the persons thought that the order was that only women and children could get in the lifeboats, and so they wouldn't let the men get in at all, even if there was room. So there was a little bit of confusion there.
Right.
But that's just become the mystique, you know, since then.
Right.
That's where all that came from, and then the mystique of the women and children first when there's... But nowadays, all ships are supposed to have enough lifeboats or even more than the people. Because they don't want that to ever happen again.
What else do they say, though, in terms of the modern laws now over saving people?
So. Well, then there were the more recent one was in 2012. There was Costa Concordia.
I remember this. Yes.
Yeah. So where it was an Italian cruise ship, and it says here this is a headline. It says Daily Mail today reports. It was every man and crew member for himself. According to the story, men refused to prioritize women and children, and fights broke out for spaces on lifeboats. So this is totally so different. So just think in terms of since 1998, when they were booing about it, and then now 2012.
The men are jumping in the boats first.
They were jumping in the boats first, right.
That is the effect of feminism.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I agree. I agree with Mona Sharon on that.
Yes. So anyway, it's interesting to see the difference. So
I heard there's now, aren't there some new laws then on that?
I guess the laws are basically that there should be 125% lifeboat capacity, creating a surplus that in theory is supposed to prevent the need to ration the evacuation procedures. Okay. And current guidance gives no advice on prioritizing different groups of passengers. Basically, they do look for people with mobility impairments, so anyway, disabled or the elderly, and maybe babies. But otherwise, they don't prioritize people. So it just says that the notion of women and children first was a convention, but it was never anything written down. So but one man who was a evacuation specialist at the University of Greenwich, I guess, who specializes in modeling evacuation procedures, has looked closely at how people actually behave in disaster situations. And he says that people tend to behave well in disaster situations, and they usually try to help those that are more needy than themselves. He also says that in general, young, healthy, fit guys stayed and helped the people. It's a heroic thing, but it's not unique. It happens time and again. I don't know whether it's rational. I think the priority would be that you would help people who appear to need help. Children obviously need help, but helping women is not necessary. This is what this man said. Women don't need help just because they're women. It's more important to identify the people who need help. Okay, so anyway, it just shows that they still don't prioritize women, but I thought it was interesting that at least young men still tend to want to help somehow. Yeah. They have a need or desire to do that.
One thing that Mona Sharon does say in her book, that chivalry is a natural inclination for a manly man.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
I like that too, yes.
Yeah. And then she brings out, I'd like to actually talk about her book some more later. When I get that article done, I'll probably want to talk about it. But I know in her book, and again, it's worth reading, it's called Sex Matters, and it's by Mona Sharon. She's a great conservative writer, and she also has a podcast that she works on. But in her book called Sex Matters, she talks about what happened in Aurora, Colorado. If you remember, in 2012, there was an assassin opened fire in one of the crowded movie theaters. And I remember that from the news. That's all this, when all these shocking mass murders began to really happen. And there was four young men were actually dating. And, of course, Mona Sharon believes that colleges today should teach people how to date properly. And I really like that because we do that here. We teach people how to date properly. But there were four of the young men that actually pushed their dates to the floor and then laid their bodies on them so they didn't get shot. Three of them were killed. Three of the young men were killed. And but all their dates were saved. And then, of course, the fourth one, he was shot in the leg, but he survived. And here's what she says, that self-sacrificing protectiveness continues to exist after decades of denigration to its testament. So in other words, she's talking about feminist denigration. And it is a testament to the best that men are. And so she has a lot of respect for men. Then she also talks in the same book about what happened on the train in France, and this was in 2015. There was a terrorist attack on a commuter train in France. It says six unarmed men, three Americans, two Frenchmen, and one Briton joined together to take on the gunman. And I remember when that happened, and there was a lot of French people on that train that were very happy that those guys, stood up for it. It says the sound of gunfire awakened three young American tourists. And she gives their names there. It says, in a moment evocative of Flight 93 passengers' courage on 9/11, they saw this, terrorist with the guns, and he said, hey, he simply said, let's go. And they got up, and they stopped him from murdering more people, on the train. And so those things are natural to men, and, we shouldn't necessarily want to try and block them out. Now, maybe we should we are going to run out of time here. I think maybe we ought to just go to the end of his essay. And he goes to the very last couple of paragraphs there. He says, but kitty centrists get you only so far. What if there are no children on board? And he gives us another scenario. And I really love it when he does this. You are on the Titanic 3. So now we're in the future. He said, a singles cruise, no kids, no moms, no dads. Now, iceberg, lifeboats, action. And he said, here's my scenario. The men, out of sheer irrational gallantry, should let the women go first. And the women, out of sheer feminist self-respect, should refuse. Result, stalemate. How does the movie end? How should it end? Hurry, the ship's going down. So I really, again, I think... what he's doing there is he's just showing that maybe there is a conundrum and no one really knows how to respond because of what feminism has done, to chivalry and how it's really gotten this war between the sexes going. Well, that is all the time we have for today's program. So next time, I'll delve into another essay by Charles Krauthammer with another special guest. So I just want to thank you for being here today.
Oh, you're welcome.
You may not be here on the next program, but maybe you will be. We'll have to find out. We are now moving closer to the end of our series titled A Tribute to Charles Krauthammer. We are reading selected portions of his book of essays titled Things That Matter. Now, there's still some more to come, so you can buy this book at Amazon.com. You can find a used copy of the book at ABEbooks.com. And, of course, you can also check your local library. Now, please write me any comments you may have to JBL@PCOG.org. Or even if you don't remember that, you can write to KPCG FM. It says you can also follow JBL on Twitter at JBLiterature1. I've been beefing up that website, and there's some really beautiful pictures of the universe up there right now. It says you can also follow JBL on Facebook. Simply search for Just the Best Literature. So until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.